Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, October 28, 2016. Ethiopia and Sudan sign a security agreement.
We will not support an armed struggling group or anyone who opts for a path of war, and therefore both of us will not allow any armed movement detracting our peace in our region.
And residents of Wau town assure Equatorians that despite threatening letters, they will not be attacked in Bahr al-Ghazal.
These barbarianism behaviors and characters assuring you that the letter written on 24th October 2016 does not reflect feelings and views of the youth in this state.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Ethiopia's Prime Minister visited South Sudan today to sign agreements on security and economic development between the two countries. Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn told reporters at the Juba International Airport that South Sudanese leaders should fully implement the shaky August 2015 peace agreement. He said a fragile peace is better than armed conflict. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
Ethiopian Prime Minister Desalegn, whose own government has ruled out holding new nationwide elections to address grievances fueled by nearly a year of deadly protest, stressed the need for South Sudan leaders to restore peace in the country. Desalegn says he supports the deployment of a regional protection force in South Sudan as mandated by the United Nations Security Council, saying it will improve the security in the country.
The prime duty for ensuring peace and stability is the responsibility of all South Sudanese people. This calls for ensuring inclusive involvement of all your people and underlines the need to every effort to avoid mistrust and suspicion. Unsatisfactory peace is better than continued conflict. Armed conflict has never been a solution, a lasting solution for the freedom and nation building. Ethiopia rejects the path of war and armed resistance in any form.
Desalegn says the South Sudanese people have suffered for too long and peace would be allowed to prevail in the country. Desalegn, the current head of the regional bloc IGAD, says regional leaders want to work with South Sudan's leaders to restore peace in the country.
We are committed to work with the government of the National Transitional Unity Government. And I think the peace process and implementation process has to go smoothly as it is started now. On behalf of IGAD, the chair of the IGAD leaders of the assembly, I also represent IGAD to again reaffirm IGAD's commitment to work for peace and stability in South Sudan, and I thank you.
A joint communique issued by the Prime Minister and President Salva Kiir says Juba and Addis Ababa are committed to strengthening their bilateral relations. The two leaders also signed a memorandum of understanding on a host of political and economical issues affecting both countries. Desalegn says he and Mr. Kiir specifically agreed on a security deal which commits the two governments to not support armed groups fighting in each other's countries.
We will not support an armed struggling group or anyone who opts for a path of war, and therefore both of us will not allow any armed movement detracting our peace in our region, both in Ethiopia and South Sudan, and will cooperate in a strong army-to-army cooperation, where the president has agreed to send his chief of staff quickly to Addis Ababa, and they will work together on the common cooperation of making our borders and also inland secure.
President Kiir says He believes the security deal signed today will help restore peace in the country.
So we will be vigilant always to review all the agreements. These agreements will benefit the two countries, and we are hopeful that many things will change.
For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
Meanwhile, in Addis Ababa, Ethiopian human rights activists, members of opposition parties, and those working in the media say their freedom of movement has been severely limited since the government declared a state of emergency 3 weeks ago. Many are afraid to speak out, while others had to stop working. Mata Vandewolf reports for VOA from Addis Ababa.
Ethiopia's government has insisted the six-month state of emergency, declared so authorities can deal with protests in the Oromia and Amhara regions, does not affect the constitutional rights of citizens. But while things might seem calm in the streets of Addis Ababa, those perceived as challenging the government's view say they are often blocked from carrying out their activities. Asafa Habtewold is the chairman of the opposition All Ethiopian Unity Party. He says it has become almost impossible for his party members to operate.
We cannot go from region to region and visit our members. We cannot conduct meeting with our members at different districts. All this is prohibited. All in all, we cannot make a meeting of more than 2 persons. Totally, our movement is halted. Until the end of the state of emergency, we cannot do anything.
The party, like other opposition parties, says dozens of its members have been detained or are being harassed. Addis Standard, a weekly independent magazine, announced last week it is suspending its print edition. No printing house is willing to print their magazine following the state of emergency, says editor-in-chief Tzedale Lema.
It makes everybody hang on to this unspecified fear of what's going to happen if, you know, this material is published. Will it be misunderstood? Will it be used against me? And so this has a huge impact on doing journalism for us. And as we have seen it now with Addis Standard, it even extends to vendors and printers and pretty much everyone involved in making a print product.
Tzedale says the magazine will continue online despite the country's internet being mostly switched off. Ethiopia's largest ethnic group, the Oromo, has been demonstrating for nearly a year, demanding more freedom, economic inclusiveness, and proper compensation for land disputes. Hundreds have been killed during clashes with police. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Thousands of residents of Imatong State, including many women and children, are fleeing to Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya. South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission officials in the state capital, Torit, say the number of people leaving the state has risen in the last few weeks because of the deteriorating security situation and lack of basic services. Dimo Silva Aurelio has that story for VOA from Torit.
Many of those fleeing Imatong State use public transport vehicles to travel to reach Kapoita and cross into Kenya at the Nadapal crossing point. Lena Akot and her 5 children boarded a van at Torit's Omoliha bus park this morning to travel South Sudan-Kenya border. Akot says she is leaving Torit because insecurity in and around the area makes the environment unsuitable for her children's education. Speaking in colloquial Arabic, Akot says she will only return to South Sudan when she knows it is safe.
I'm taking these children so that they can get good education because I do not see any good studies for children with all this chaos. That is why I say it's better I take them so that they will have a good future. I pray that God help my country. I will still return.
Sara Deng is another mother who has already moved her children out of the country. Deng says she is convinced Kakuma refugee camp is a more secure place to live in and bring up children. Speaking in colloquial Arabic, Deng says she is back in Torit to take her relatives' children to Kenya, where it is safe and they can recover from the trauma of losing loved ones.
I have my 3 children. and my sister's children whose mother died during this crisis, and also my brother's children whose father went missing to date. Nobody knows his whereabouts. So I want to gather them with my children. Since our country is still not safe, it's better people stay where you don't hear bad, terrifying things.
Deng says these days no one can predict what might happen next. She says until the security situation improves in South Sudan, her children will remain in Kakuma refugee camp.
I've taken my children to Kakuma. They are studying there because that place is good. It enables children to study. Unlike here, where life is difficult. There, people are given food and everything, and children do not hear the sound of guns and will concentrate on studies.
John Odongi Simon is the acting director of the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission office in Greater Eastern Equatoria. He says most people fleeing Imotong State are women and children.
The number within the last 2 weeks has already been increased. As you know, during the months of July and August, there was insecurity, ambushes on the road. That one also turned people not to move any highly. But during the silence of ambushes on the road along Kapeta Torita Road, for the whole months of, let us talk of the months of September up to October now, there's been no any more ambushes on the road. People move freely and they reach calm in Kapeta, from Kapeta up to Nadapal. People begin to move in a big number, not only from Torit here, but people also come from Juba.
Odongi says besides fearing insecurity in the state, some residents feel they can no longer cope with the tough economic conditions in South Sudan. Odongi says the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission is not keeping track of the number of people fleeing South Sudan because they are doing so voluntarily. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, hundreds of citizens stage a protest in Wau. We will have more on that when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
What personal quality have you worked on the most?
That's a difficult one. Really, that's difficult. Can I say loyalty? Maybe. Yes, I do try to be loyal. Family, to friends, and to my work.
I've worked on being a person who accommodates everybody. I've realized to say life is like you can't make it by yourself. We need other people. Now, having a need for other people, I need to accommodate everybody, good or bad, white or black. Whoever comes my way, I have to accommodate. At the end of it, oh, we share ideas.
I desire to look strong and healthy at all times. So I do a lot of exercise at home.
I used to have a bad temper, but now I'm working on it, so it's better.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Hundreds of residents of Wau Town protested against a document that has been circulating in the area, written by a known group calling itself Angry Youth of Greater Bahr El Ghazal. The group is asking people from Greater Equatoria region working with non-governmental organizations in Bahr El Ghazal to vacate the area or face attacks. While state employees, students and civil society activists marched on Thursday from Peace Square to the State House, where they presented a petition demanding authorities in Wau to crack down on authors of the letter and punish them. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Juba.
Protesters chanted One People, One Nation while staging a peaceful march yesterday to express their opposition to what they described as hate speech. A letter from a group calling itself Angry Youth of Greater Bahr El Ghazal, warning all Equatorians working in various NGOs, government institutions, to evacuate the area within 72 hours. Stephen Vuga says the group is clearly promoting hate speech among South Sudanese citizens. He says there is neither a youth group nor an association in Wau known as Angry Youth of Greater Bahr el Ghazal.
We do advocate for peaceful coexistence and living harmoniously among people of South Sudan, wherever they may be. We also strongly condemn this barbarianism, behaviors, and characters, assuring you that the letter written on 24th October 2016 does not reflect feelings and views of the youth in this state.
A 43-year-old woman from Juba and works with a local NGO in Wau who prefers not to be identified for fear of retaliation says the letter has caused a lot of fear among Equatorians. She calls on South Sudanese to promote peace and reconciliation and urge the government prevent the culture of revenge among South Sudanese communities. Earlier this week, the Office of the United Nations Humanitarian Commission say aid agencies evacuated staff who are from Greater Equatorial Region for fear that they could be attacked. A 37-year-old man from Equatoria who prefers not to be identified works with a United Nations mission in South Sudan in Wau Town. He says the documents circulating in the area has caused fear among residents and workers. And also,
we were confused. Some of us started talking to our friends who are from the region here. But we come to discover this is something just done by some elements which are not of peaceful intent. And so far, we know that nothing like that will happen. But that means we should not also rule out those who have organized, because these things was done in a very organized manner. The English which was written on that, on those notes, is quite very good English. So it means these are people who are knowledgeable and they have very good networking skills where they can simultaneously face this thing all over.
Wau State Deputy Governor Pasquale Joseph Ayan told the protesters that the government is monitoring the moves of unknown agitators in the community. Speaking in Arabic, Ayan urges all Equatorians living and working in the area to remain calm.
Any Equatorian living here in Wau should remain staying as normal. We are monitoring and seeing who are this group who wanted to come and attack you. We want to know them. We are going to get the owners of the paper through you. Move around. Don't be afraid. And if anyone slaps you, we will conclude to be behind the paper. And if anyone is caught involved in this, we are going to follow the jungle law.
Ayan says if the authorities catch those responsible for writing the letter, officials will allow the jungle law, meaning the state officials will not waste time following legal procedures before punishing the suspects. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Three African countries say they are pulling out of the International Criminal Court. VOA's Jill Craig speaks to legal experts from around the continent who say the system has flaws and more countries now appear to be serious in their threats to withdraw. But they do not see this as an end of ICC in Africa.
South Africa and Burundi have sent letters of intent to withdraw from the International Criminal Court to the UN Secretary General, with Gambia saying it will do the same. But these threats have been going on for some time, says Angela Mudukuti, international criminal justice lawyer at the Southern Africa Litigation Center.
And every year around about this time, we see the same thing, where states say they're going to withdraw, but then they never actually do it. Namibia did it last year. Kenya's been talking about it for years. Uganda's spoken about it as well. There are various states that have threatened to leave the ICC but never actually done anything. But now that someone has actually started the process, it is a different ballgame and we could see more.
African leaders have long decried a perceived bias by the court, arguing they are being unfairly targeted. The court has served a warrant for the arrest of Sudan's president, Omar al-Bashir, who is wanted for war crimes and crimes against humanity. Kenya's president, Uhuru Kenyatta, and his now deputy, William Ruto, were accused of crimes against humanity connected to 2007 and 2008 post-election violence, although the charges were subsequently withdrawn. All but one of the 10 investigations by the ICC have taken place in African countries.
The critical question comes to your mind, why other atrocities around the world are not brought to the attention of ICC, why the focus is only on Africa. So this is a question which attracts a discussion.
That was John Seka, president of the Tanganyika Law Society in Tanzania. He says that he believes an African court, such as the Arusha-based African Court on Human and People's Rights, would be a better option than the ICC. But Kenyan international law expert and University of Nairobi lecturer Herman Manyora disagrees, saying he does not believe that an African court can supplant the ICC.
For now, no. It can't work. It can't work. Africa is home to impunity. The lords of impunity cannot be expected to come up with a court of justice that can try the very same people who are the perpetrators with impunity.
Manyora argues that more progressive forces are coming into leadership positions, and they don't like the impunity.
You know, they are beginning to take government. Buhari is in Nigeria. There are others elsewhere. And I don't think it's a static situation to say those with the agenda to leave will remain in power. So I don't think Africa will live en masse. It's not possible.
Tanzania's Seka agrees.
I am not envisioning a dead ICC in the next years. I think it will continue to exist for quite a while, and it will be with us for more time to come.
Mudukuti says that state parties have the power to amend the Rome Statute, so they should instead work to fix the problems, not leave.
And states that have signed up to the Rome Statute have the capacity and the potential to affect change from inside. But once you leave the system, there's nothing you can do about it.
South Africa, Burundi, and Gambia are planning to leave anyway. The question now is, will other African nations follow? Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Still in Nairobi, an international human rights mission to Kenya announces its finding today. The mission looked at issues around LGBT rights, land rights, and torture, as well as attacks on human rights defenders. Lenny Rovaga has details from Nairobi.
Rights activists have complained for years about alleged extrajudicial killings by Kenyan police. Criticism intensified after the killings this June of human rights lawyer Willie Kimani, his client, and their driver. The new report on civil liberties is the result of a fact-finding mission by an umbrella group, the World Organization Against Torture. Benson Olugbo was a mission delegate and is executive director of the Clean Foundation, an organization that agitates for what it calls accessible justice. Speaking to reporters in Nairobi Friday, Olugbo said Kenya needs police and judiciary reform if the country's civil liberties are to remain intact.
So we are asking for police reform, which is sustained, because it's not a day's business, it's a process. We're also asking that agencies that are independent should also be allowed to work, and that where there are grievances, people should have that right to go to court, to go to police to report, and that the respect of Kenyan citizens, the right actually also, to demonstrate, which is provided in the Constitution, should be protected.
The new report was compiled after the mission met with the representatives of civil society groups, the police, the judiciary, and the European Union delegation in Kenya. Samuel Mohochi, the executive director at the International Commission of Jurists, ICJ, Kenya chapter, said democratic gains made over the years are slowly being eroded by authorities, and advocates for civil liberties are being silenced.
I think the increasing or rising levels of intolerance in society, especially for specific duty bearers or actors, would then create a fertile ground for increased intolerance to criticisms. And that in itself is a clawback to democratic gains. And it starts slowly. Before you realize it, you're in a police state. So these are things that should be flagged at the earliest opportune moment.
The Kenya National Commission on Human Rights, KNCHR, is an autonomous public body charged with redressing human rights violations. Commission Chairperson Kagwiri Mbogori says that in the past year, KNCHR has presented 81 cases of forced disappearances to the Inspector General, the Attorney General's Office, and the Director of Public Prosecutions for action. Mbogori says that proving who is behind the disappearances is becoming extremely hard.
The act of disappearance can be explained in a number of ways. It may be some people have been killed and their bodies have never been found, but it is impossible to really narrow down and point a finger to a particular culprit or culprit. This is very, very saddening, and right now we are dealing with citizens who have encountered this, and it is very harrowing. It is worse than death, because you don't know whether your loved one has died or whether they are somewhere suffering or where they went, etc. The uncertainty is terrible.
The World Organization Against Torture says the elections slated for 2017 could prove fatal if the trend of silencing civil society continues unabated. Around 1,100 people were killed in violence after the 2007 elections, with another 600,000 being displaced. Next year's vote is scheduled for August. New members of Kenya's Electoral Commission are set to take office this December. Lenny Rovaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Bandito by Emmanuel Camilo from WOW.
Bandito ninde, modi well not is in me banga, modi well not is in me birunga, modi well not is in me wota, modi well not kere ne di taibano me, dakaba matino ninde, modi well not kere ne di taibano me, dakaba matino ninde.
Ani da ngo damru ngo tarango no,
kene no sono ti dekada utabano,
anga soy ni meditaizeri,
my vi. Na de no ping and out at the phone number dir yo no ai tuta kitito tele no bandito duta matani no donze tia kindo no so nita mar koneta nzombo nita zei nita zoko disaile with a level kei bo bi du nobo de piti kalom vo diru tizo zuru na so na zangbe ya bi kambe del bada uta kata soko na del baku del bambe na telo bi bi nabo dizo na tono libo nita wali tandobo niti del no te yelwo venino ka bandifo dizo na go kumre
We have been listening to Emmanuel Camilo rapping in his native Balanda language with the song Bandito. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Have a restful weekend, and we hope to see you back here on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
data ya bi kampe wo data marapi wo mina fiti sokati data ku bigi awa turki diva tamamal murdaki dano atta gendi kabiri ngobagi.